Thank you, Dr. Maurice. And now we welcome again Louisa Morelli.
So good morning to everybody. And as Lourdes already said, I'm not working in aviation directly. I'm working on biofuels. I'm the responsible for the biofuels activities for the Joint Research Center, which is one of the Directorate General of the European Commission. We have the scientific body of the European Commission, so we are the body who is providing scientific inputs to our colleagues, the policymakers, to make their legislation. And the reason why I'm here, as you already said, Lourdes, we don't want to, let's say, reinvent the wheel. I mean, biofuels is a big world, which includes transport, and aviation is part of transport. So in Europe, we already have two legislations, very clear legislations, which are regulating the use of biofuels, the life cycle analysis, the sustainability criteria, etc. And the importance for us is that we share the same framework, so I'm reinforcing what you already said, not to just move from this framework, which is already well implemented and clear. So I will give some backgrounds of the legislation, of the European legislation. We have two directives, actually, in Europe regarding biofuels. The first one is the so-called Renewable Energy Directive, which has been approved last year in 2009. And the second one is the so-called Fuel Quality Directive. The purpose of the two directives is different. The first one, the Renewable Energy Directive, besides setting a target for the share of renewable energies of 20% by 2020, also specifies a target for the share of biofuels in transport, sorry, of renewable energies in transport, so not only biofuels in theory, but in general renewable energy, but we have to face with the fact that at the moment electric vehicles or hydrogen vehicles, etc., are quite far from a big share. So we have this 10% target to be respected within 2020 in transport, while for the Fuel Quality Directive the purpose is different. It mentions a 10% greenhouse gas reduction in the fuel, and 6% of this target should come from alternative fuels. Moreover, the Fuel Quality Directive gives regulations about the biofuel blends in transport, and I'm talking about automotive. In this case, for gasoline and diesel, for example, a maximum of 10% in ethanol and 7% in biodiesel without the need to declare at the station, let's say. So the directive, the two directives are duplicating in identical terms some important issues. The first one is that both the directives are really paying great attention to the environmental goals. In fact, a number of sustainability criteria are specified in the directive. And the first one is for sure the greenhouse gas impact of the use of the share of renewable energies of biofuels. And the criteria is the directives require that a minimum of 35% in greenhouse gas reduction with respect to the fossil fuel they are replacing. This emission saving, this target will be increased to 50% by 2017 and to 60% in 2019 for new installations. So the second important criteria is the preservation of biodiversity. So biofuels cannot be made in highly biodiverse areas, and which include also forests, primary forests, continuously forested areas, etc. The third criteria is the land use criteria. So raw materials should not come from land with high carbon stocks, which means wetlands, forested areas, and more important, from peatlands, which is a big issue for those familiar with biofuels story, because peatland cultivation requires the drainage of the peatland. For example, cultivating palms to produce palm, to have palm oil in Malaysia, Indonesia. If this happens, if this happens on peatlands, the drainage of peatlands may emit no, not may, emits such a high amount of carbon stocks in the atmosphere that alone can negate any positive greenhouse gas benefit from the biofuel policy. And the fourth criteria is a social criteria, so requirement for good agricultural and environmental conditions. The directive specifies a sustainability scheme. Well, the two directives specify a sustainability scheme. Biofuels can be sold in Europe only if, and they count towards a target, only if they respect these four sustainability criteria. And this applies not only to biofuels produced in Europe, but to any biofuel imported in Europe, so also to feedstocks that are coming from outside. So this is World Trade Organization compatible, let's say. The directives also foresee incentives for the production of second generation biofuels, which are, of course, more promising because they do not have land use issues, they do not compete with food, etc. And in particular, there is a big incentive in the production and implementation of new biorefineries and industries for second generation biofuels, since they count double towards the target. So it's very important, and I see that this is particularly important for aviation, where the production is going into this direction. So it's clear that second generation will count double to respect the 10% target. So practically, how this scheme is implemented? First of all, it is the responsibility of each member state to monitor and verify the compatibility of the biofuels, the declarations of the producers of their biofuels, if this is compatible with the sustainability criteria. But the Commission has to provide guidelines to member states on how to do this and to producers on how to assess the sustainability of their biofuels. Also, the multilateral and bilateral agreements are foreseen, and to reduce the administrative burdens, also voluntary schemes may be presented to the Commission, to the Member States, and the Commission has the right to accept or not to accept these voluntary schemes. But this will reduce the administrative burdens a lot, so these are really encouraged. And finally, there are reporting requirements and monitoring requirements specified in the two directives by the Commission. So I go into details of the LCA methodology, how greenhouse gas emission savings are calculated in the two directives. There are three possibilities. The first one is for each producer to use what is called an actual value, which means that each producer can declare their own greenhouse gas saving value. How it is calculated? The methodology is defined in the directive, is specified in the Annex 5 of the directive. And very simply, I show here the equation that is in the directive, where the emission from the fuel in use, in the whole life cycle is given from this sum of terms, which account for the emissions from cultivation, because it's clear that we are talking about transport, and most of the biofuels now, the share of biofuels is coming still from first generation biofuels because of a number of reasons. First of all, because the price is the only one competitive with the oil and gasoline prices. So we have emissions from cultivation, emission from land use, which means carbon stocks emission from land use change, emission from processing, emission from transport and distribution, and we also have emissions from the fuel in use in the processing. And we also have negative terms, which is a discount, a reduction of emissions, for example, in improved agricultural management, from carbon capture and sequestration, and from carbon capture and replacement, and also from the excess of electricity generated in cogeneration. For example, this term is very important for Brazilian sugarcane, in which they entirely use the byproduct to regenerate in cogeneration to generate electricity, so this is bringing a lot of greenhouse gas benefits. There are a lot of uncertainties, of course, in this equation. And I will stress that the first uncertainty is that the indirect land use change effects are not included. I've heard in the presentation from Mr. Schrumberger from the World Bank Organization before, he mentioned land use change issues. What I wish to mention is that we have to consider what is indirect land use change effects. And briefly, what is this? For example, if we displace 1 ton of EU wheat from food to make biofuels, overall, the greenhouse gas emissions in Europe didn't change. We just displaced the use of wheat. But we have to fill in this gap left in the food market, unless we eat less, which is not the case. So what happens is somewhere else in the world, we have to, in any case, fill in this gap. And this will bring to land use change, but not for biofuels, for food. So it's difficult to regulate this with a legislation that regulates biofuels. That's why it's an indirect effect, but we have to account for this. For example, a big effect of the increase in biodiesel production in Europe is happening in Malaysia and Indonesia for the increase of palm oil. We are importing a lot of palm oil, not for biodiesel. We are not importing biodiesel from Malaysia, but we are importing palm oil from Malaysia. And if the cultivations are happening on peatland, the carbon emitted will be so high that it will cancel any positive greenhouse gas benefit from the use of biodiesel. This effect is very difficult. The Commission and also the United States, the EPA and the Air Resource Board, we are in contact with them, are trying to assess this effect and to consider this in the regulation, in the legislation. Everything is based on agroeconomic modeling, so it's very complicated and the uncertainties are quite high. The second point of uncertainty is how the emissions are allocated in the production phase between the fuel between the main fuel and the co-product, and I will go back to this later. And the last point of uncertainty is nitrous oxide emissions from cultivation, which is, data on this are quite scarce. The second possibility is the use of default values. So to reduce administrative burdens, not all the producers can calculate their own actual values. So there is a big list of default values for various feedstocks, various type of biofuels in the directive. These are calculated based on the study performed by the JRC, my institute, together with CONCAUE and UCAR, which are the two oil and car organizations in Europe. This is the well-to-wheel, they provided this well-to-wheel report, which is one of the reference reports for the life cycle assessment in Europe. And, so based on the input data from this study, the directive published a list of default values, which is in continuous implementation. So new feedstocks and new type of biofuels and new pathways are continuously implemented. The third possibility is to use a combination of default values for some pathways and actual values for some others, if for some producers they can calculate only some for some pathways and not for the whole. Just an example of the default values published in the annex of the directive. As you can see, the greenhouse gas saving is very different going from one feedstock to the other. What is relevant for the directive is these default values, which are the typical values plus a 40% increase due to the processing emission during processing. And we go from a very low greenhouse gas saving from palm oil biodiesel of 19% if the process has not been specified, but this saving will increase if methane is captured during the process phase, going to, for example, a very high value for sugarcane ethanol and high value for wheat ethanol if cogeneration is used in the plant. Again, the results depend on the process and on the byproduct in use, so as I already briefly explained, but be careful because these figures do not include indirect land use change, and the values will change a lot once we will account for these indirect land use change effects. And I'm afraid that at least for first generation biofuels, most of the greenhouse gas saving will decrease if indirect land use change effects may be accounted. Just last few things about co-products, because we have to make a distinction here. The most suitable way to account for the emissions from co-products would be the so-called substitution approach, which means during a process producing phase of biofuel, we produce the main fuel and we always have co-product, for example, soy meal in the production of soybean diesel, etc. So how to account, how to divide the emissions between the fuel and the co-products? Substitution consists in evaluating the use that we can make of the co-product. For example, in the case of soy meal, we can use it as feed for animals, and subtract the emissions saved not producing feed for animals, because we are substituting this with the soy meal, for example. We subtract these emissions to the entire chain, fuel pure product plus products. And in this case, we have a discount of greenhouse gas emissions from the main use. This methodology is the correct one, but unfortunately it's good for policy analysis, which analyzes the whole impact of biofuels in the market, but it's not suitable for regulatory purposes, for example, if we have to apply to the transport sector only. Plus, it may bring two perverse incentives, because in some cases, some producers can be incentivized to make more byproduct than biofuel to discount more greenhouse gas from the fuel and to respect the target. So this was the approach used in the well-to-wheel study, which is a reference European study, and which was a policy analysis of biofuels use. But for the legislation, what was decided to use is another approach. So emissions are divided between the fuel and the co-product according to they may be allocated according to their mass, to the energy content, or to the economic value. The biofuels directive, the European directives, agreed none of the three, first of all, none of the three methodologies is perfect. But okay, we had to find a compromise, and the compromise was to go for the energy content allocation. So I go to my conclusions. First of all, the sustainability is a necessary condition, a sine qua non condition, for the biofuels promotion and use in Europe, which means that if we want to use biofuels, any type of biofuels, for transport, for aviation, from whatever, we have to respect environmental and social conditions. In Europe, a clear life cycle analysis methodology has been already defined, so we recommend to stay strictly to this methodology, which for sure includes also the production of second generation biofuels. There are uncertainties in the correct evaluation of this greenhouse gas emission saving and reduction due to the three points that I already mentioned before. And final point is that the coordination between the different bodies and different regulations, non-EU regulations, is fundamental. I finished.